to the can here. Good day, listeners. This is your host, Michael Martins, with the Martins Critical Review, broadcasting early this morning from a smoky, cool day here in West Central British Columbia. In today's program, we examine a landmark American legal action being taken against the perpetrators of the COVID-19 scamdemic. We will examine the evidence in the case, understand how the case is being presented, and whether or not this case has any chance of success. Joining us for this episode is attorney Thomas Rentz. Mr. Rentz is the lead attorney in several major cases brought forward in Ohio, New Mexico, Maine, and nationally against the CDC, DHHS, Biden and Fauci regarding their forced vaccine mandates, big tech censorship, the COVID-19 lockdowns, hospital murders, mask mandates, business closures, false PCR data, fraudulent death numbers, and much more. Mr. Rentz, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for your time today, and it's an honor to be able to speak with you.
That's mutual. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you, sir. So before we delve into the details of this present situation, perhaps you could share with the listeners who Thomas Rentz was and what was he doing prior to this COVID-19 era?
Well, who Thomas Rentz is are pretty much the same thing. As a nobody from a little town in Ohio. And I had only gotten into practice of law in the traditional sense a few years back. Decided that I was going to open a nice, quiet little law practice in a little town and just kind of have a stable, quiet little thing while my kids grew up. COVID hit, and that all kind of went out the door, and the whole quiet and little thing kind of, it just got overran. I had actually, surprisingly, and coincidentally, I'm a God guy, so I'm a God family country guy. And you know, to me, this is just an act of God. But I had started working on a master's of science in health sciences, and was working through that when this COVID thing started coming up. And so I had started doing some research on COVID back in December, January of 2019, 2020. You know, when it hit the news, I thought it was interesting. And so I was doing work on this for masters, you know, epidemiology, biostats, things like that. And basically everything I saw that was just not jiving with the science I was learning. You know, so I'm studying the epidemiology and the biostatistics and all these numbers. And I'm looking at the numbers that they're reporting in the scientific journals and, you know, through government websites. Then I'm listening to what they're saying on the news, and they are completely out of line. They weren't even close. So by the time March rolled down and we start looking at these lockdowns, I was pretty fit to be tied because they had been building up fear and anxiety over a disease that really never had justification for the fear and anxiety that it had. You know, we have things like TB out there, the original SARS, the original MERS, all are far, far, far more dangerous than this. Yet, you know, we lock down the world and destroy freedom all over the place over something that's really not that big of a deal. If treated, you know, I have absolutely no hesitation saying that if we had not destroyed and prevented early treatment, this would be less dangerous than the early flu. So, you know, this whole thing is going on. And, you know, fast forward to March, you know, I talked to my wife and prayed on it and said, you know, listen, my wife, Annie, I said, listen, Annie, I said, you know, I know we're looking at, you know, doing our quiet little thing and just doing what we do. But I said, I just don't have this in me to watch this sort of nonsense occurring and not do something. So I prayed on it and I asked God to put it in front of me. And if he did, I said I'd fight it my way. And he put it in front of me. So I've been fighting ever since.
Yeah, well, good for you. I mean, we certainly need more people like yourself and the brave frontline doctors that have been speaking out. And you are so true with your statement in terms of early preventative treatment that at least in some states has been recognized. You know, here in this nation of Canada, the once great nation, you know, we still think of ivermectin as horse paste and some sort of delusional treatment that only madmen would propose. And, you know, the federal health authority now is talking about a booster every 3 months for a virus which no longer exists. So, you know, we're and then some discussion as well about releasing an Omicron based vaccine, which again, you know, it's a virus which no longer exists in the wild. So why would we embark upon that pathway? It's madness. So what was your original intention? Practicing law, was that just so to bring in some income for the family and have an enjoyable small town life?
Well, you know, I mean, I had went to law school quite a few years back and had done some different things here and there and was doing some consulting for quite a few years and just decided that, you know, running around and doing all the different things I was doing was frankly exhausting. And, you know, my kids are getting old enough that they're starting to play, you know, little kid sports and things like that. And I enjoy watching it and I enjoy being around. So it was really just it was stability, but it was also something I enjoy. I mean, I enjoy fighting for whatever. At heart, I fight. That's what I am. That's who I am. And so, you know, fighting for people, you know, whether it's for personal issues or for larger issues was something that was important to me. So, yeah, I was just looking for something that was stable that I could enjoy and do my thing. And that was that. And like I said, I didn't open a practice with any intention of trying to, pick a fight with the most powerful people in the world. I mean, you know, I just, this started and I'm suing governors and suing the federal government and suing everybody, you know, and it's like, but I don't believe that a title bestows nobility, right? I mean, not to take something from the old days, but yeah, great. You're a president. You're a congressman. You're a head of an agency. You're a prime minister. Well, that's super, but nobility comes from your actions, not from your position. And unfortunately, a lot of these people think that because of their position, they're above the law. They're more important than the other people that are out there. You know, no government can govern without the consent of the governed. And it doesn't matter what country that is. It doesn't matter what government that is. But a lot of these people have lost sight of that. And so, to me, that was just, I went into this to provide stability and an opportunity for my kids, you know, and to be around. Well, I didn't want evil to stick its head up in the world, but it did. I didn't want this to happen. But, you know, I really contrast this and compare this a lot to World War II. The Jews in Europe did not want Hitler to come. They did not want to see the evil rise that did. And unfortunately, a lot of them didn't fight back. They just kept their heads down as Hitler was rising. And if I just keep my head down, you know, no one will say anything. You know, they won't notice me. But it didn't work out real well. And yeah, I was trying to learn from the lessons of history. So I'm watching as our freedoms are attacked, as people's livelihoods are attacked, as their basic human rights are destroyed. And if I'm doing this in part to preserve or to create opportunities for my children, well, how can I possibly bury my head in the sand while the whole world is being destroyed around them? You know, what kind of a future are they going to have if the freedoms in North America are destroyed? If we're no longer constitutional republics or, you know, at least free nations generally, you know, and instead we're turning into socialist, communist, you know, dictatorships. I mean, these just monstrous people who, you know, they like to pretend that we have our elections and our freedoms. But, you know, the reality is that they don't listen to the people who have elected them. They don't listen to the people who they're supposed to be representing. You know, they feel that they, once they get to Washington or, you know, to Parliament in Canada, that they're somehow above and better than those people. So we had to stand up and the nobodies, the people like me, the people who are being governed, we're the ones that have to stand up. We're the ones that have to say no, because ultimately we are the ones who either give our consent or withhold our consent to the governing bodies. And I cannot give my consent for the governing bodies to take away freedoms that my children need to have in their future.
Yes, very well said. And just wanted to unpack something that you said there in terms of, you know, these people with titles seem to lack accountability. And I think a title should confer not a sense of nobility, but a sense of accountability. And that should be expected of these people and demanded. And maybe that's, you know, as this, we seek a pathway forward. I mean, I think we really need to redress how we are interacting with our government and how the people interact. And Reiner Fulmisch on my show a couple months back, you know, made the statement that, you know, if you are still complying, you are part of the problem. As you, yep. as you suggested in your example with World War II, those people that didn't stand up, that complied and simply tried to go about with their business, you know, we know how that wound up, and that's not the action that we should be taking.
No, no. And I think that it's really a critical thing. So it's interesting for me, like I said, I'm a Christian, and I don't care. I mean, I hope everybody is, but I don't, it's not my job to force my faith on anyone. But because of my faith, that's how I look at the world. And one of the things that's really interesting about Christianity is this kind of concept of servant leadership. And it's something that I used when I was consulting. I would teach businesses, talk to businesses about, and something that I really push right now. Like, if you work with me, and I've got a few, when I started, I was answering my own phone. Now I've got some employees and some other lawyers I'm working with. But one of the first things I tell people, and one of the first things that I talk about consistently, is that the farther up the food chain you are, the more responsible you are to the people who work with and for you. So to me, my job, if I'm the boss of something, then my job is to facilitate the success of the people who are working for me. It's not to sit there and to lord over them or to tell them what they have to do to promote me. My job is to help them to be successful. And that's how this should be. You know, if you want to lead, that means you have to serve. And the more nobility, the more power, the more authority you have, the more responsibility you have to serve the people that you propose to lead. I mean, you can't be a leader by telling everybody their job is to prop you up. And if you're the president of the United States or the prime minister of Canada, or, you know, pick your position like that, you serve everybody. Everybody. There is no greater servitude than that position. But yet that's not how we look at it. Too many of these people look at themselves as kings or you know, people who have some sort of right or authority to be in this position. And that is not what it is. And as we have lost sight of the fact that a public servant is there to serve, we have really, really lost a lot of freedoms. And you know, at this point, our governments, US and Canadian and many other around the world, are working to consolidate power structures as though they have a right to be there, as though they deserve to be there. I mean, when I listen to Nancy Pelosi talk in the United States, I listen to Trudeau talk, they talk as though they have a right to be there. They deserve to be there. And that's not the case. I'm sorry, but if you were elected president of the United States, if you were the majority leader of the House of the Representatives in the United States, if you were the Prime Minister of Canada, there is no greater role than your servitude towards people. And you just absolutely disenfranchising and ignoring people and their wishes and their desires is beyond arrogant. It's the epitome of arrogance. It's the epitome of narcissism. These people have totally lost any sort of a moral compass. And I don't think there's ever been a greater demonstration of just how lost it is than the lies and the just absolute fraud committed against the people of this world in the COVID narrative.
Yeah, very true, very true. And these values that you speak of and how you look at leadership is interesting and it's refreshing. I was at a business conference recently where these specific types of values were being extolled. And again, this is part of this paradigm shift. I think that we need to learn this lesson to move forward, that, you know, this leadership is a form of servitude, and your job is to empower those people as opposed to crush them and rule them with an iron fist. I also notice amongst many of my guests, and certainly here in Canada, amongst the freedom movement, these people tend to be people of faith. Why do you think that is? And you know, have you encountered the same thing in your neck of the woods?
Well, I have encountered the same thing everywhere globally. And I think that the reason is very clear. If you believe in a creator God, then you believe that he could have created humanity as slaves just as easily as he could have created them as free people. And if you look at the nature of this, people of faith are inherently people of freedom. That's the reason that every single dictatorship and communist nation in the world immediately tries to move their countries towards atheism. See, the thing is faith is always a choice. If you believe in God, it's because you choose. Okay, there is no direct evidence of God in the sense that I can't show you a picture of him. I can't, you know, pick up a phone and call him. But I believe he's there. Absolutely. Absolutely. And the more I believe, the more evidence he's offered me. But that aside, faith is always a choice. You can choose to believe or not to believe. Now, if you believe in a creator and you believe that he endowed us all with the freedom to choose the most important decision that there is, which is the decision to believe or not to believe, well, then you have to believe that freedom is inherent to the human spirit. It's just a part of humanity. It's the nature of humanity. And it's demonstrated by the fact that every time tyranny has risen up in history, the people have ultimately rebelled and fought their way towards freedom. You know, historically, there's never been a long-term dictatorship or communist this or yeah, I mean, pick your thing. I mean, they used to call them monarchies or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But it always comes back to tyranny. Tyranny never lasts. It can't last. And, you know, these tyrants keep coming up with new ideas and new creative ways to try and promote tyranny, and it always ends up failing because it's never going to be a long-term solution. But I think this stems from a lot of our leaders, particularly the billionaires and the you know, leaders of the dictatorships and communists, not all, but a lot of these people, to my mind, have mental health issues. I mean, when, you know, you get $1 billion and you look around, it's not enough. I need 10 billion. There's something wrong with you, you know, but this desire for power and control and long-term control, these things are indications that you got something wrong. You know, if you've got $1 billion and you're not thinking to yourself, what can I do to help lift up my fellow man? Well, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? You can only spend it so many ways. You know, I mean, you need to keep it for what, 10 generations, I guess. Yeah. But so I think that it really does. This push for freedom is inherent in human nature, and it does find its home in people of faith. And, you know, for the people that don't have faith, there tends to be this desire ultimately for the preservation and promotion of self, even at the expense of others, which is also something contradictory to what most faith teaches. And that seems to be where a lot of these people in power are.
Interesting. So do you feel a growing sense of frustration that it's even more and more information comes to light to disprove the mainstream narrative that so many people at all levels within society continue to participate within the charade?
You know, I'm a pretty patient guy. That's what's allowed me to, you know, I've been fighting this since day one. Actually, before anybody even got locked down, I was fighting this. Like I said, I started studying this in December, January, 2019, 2020. So we're approaching 3 years of just around the clock on this. I'm exhausted. But I've been exhausted for over a year. So I guess, you know, whatever. I don't know if frustration is it. I feel pity for a lot of people, you know, people who are out there in their third or fourth booster, because, you know, the reality is you look at what that's going to do to their health long term. And, you know, I mean, every indication that we're getting is that, you know, these jabs are going to be as bad as we thought they were, maybe worse. Yeah. You know, if you've, nobody knows the 3 to 5 year or 10 year health issues you're going to see, but, you know, given what we've seen in the first year or two, it really is looking horrendous. So, you know, I think pity's more what's in my heart for these people. The frustration isn't so much with the people who've been lied to, but with the people who are doing the lying. You know, I mean, at some point, you know, how many people do you got to kill before you say, oops? You know, but I mean, all it does is it indicates that there's intent. Because at some point, you know, this is well beyond does the jab work? I mean, we all know it doesn't. Anybody looking at any science can see that it doesn't. Anybody looking at any of this can tell that this is a terrible decision. And, you know, for these political leaders who are still trying to act like they don't know because, you know, Pfizer and Moderna are giving them billions of dollars, you know, that's just dishonest. It's not even sort of realistic. So yeah, that's where my annoyance and anger is directed. It's not so much at the people that are, I mean, don't get me wrong. If you're going and getting your baby jabbed, that's pretty frustrating to me, because to me, that's negligent as a parent. I mean, what, you haven't heard there's controversy about this and you haven't bothered to look in long enough, far enough to see whether, you know, hey, there's zero benefit for a child and yet we're still going to push it on our baby. So for those people, I have a little bit of frustration at this point, but mostly my annoyance is with the people who are murdering people.
Right. Yeah. And of course, this also marks probably one of the greatest transfers of wealth from the taxpayer to private corporations in our modern history. And, you know, that I'm pretty sure is also part of our present economic woes, as billions of dollars has been shunted into these pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, you know, I mean, make no mistake, that's really one of the foundational aspects of this, right? I mean, the wealth transfer. So what happened? You know, the small businesses were shut down around the world. The big businesses were allowed to function. The big businesses got bigger. The small businesses shut down or were gone. They eliminated a whole bunch of competition. So naturally, Google and Amazon and, you know, all these giant companies are supportive of this. We're eliminating competition. It's a great thing for them, right? Meanwhile, they're also, you know, they're the only place you can buy anything because everything else is closed. So, yeah, I mean, this is a huge win for big business, devastating for small, mid-sized business. I mean, you know, I don't know how they're ever going to come back, because at this point, you know, our governments are so anti-small business, just in our regulatory structure and our legal structure, all this sort of stuff. You know, I mean, it's very difficult to see how they're going to come back. Which is scary, because small business is the mechanism by which a middle class exists, right? Most people in the U.S. especially work at small to mid-sized businesses. If you want to make it to the top, you know, if you don't have generational wealth, if you want to be a first-generation millionaire, you generally have to start a small business and work your way up. And that mechanism is being destroyed. And without that mechanism, then you end up having a class system. You have those that have and those that do not. And that seems to be what they're pushing towards, because our appointed leaders, who no longer represent people, are far more concerned with ensuring that there's a small group that they can control than a large group that they can't. There's no, because the accountability is easier, you know, just, hey, yeah, keep these few billionaires happy. And we got an endless pot of money for re-election. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of corruption in this. I think it's nefarious. And I don't in any way, shape, or form think this is accidental.
Yeah. Certainly at this point, you know, 2.5 years in, if anybody thinks that this is a wild release from a wet market in Wuhan and the government was your best friend is a little delusional. Yeah. So how important do you feel the upcoming midterm elections will be for the global trajectory?
They're huge. They're huge. I mean, you know, in the U.S. and election issues are not my primary issue, but I've spent some time looking at everything, because, you know, it's interesting. If you follow the COVID food chain, if you see who's making money where, you see people funding the election are also the people making money off of COVID. You know, you look at Facebook. Facebook made all sorts of money off of COVID. Mark Zuckerberg supported all of the COVID stuff. And he worked with the government to censor. And, well, he also funded election drop boxes and all sorts of other things. You look at the way the money flows. All these issues are controlled or impacted by the same people. So if you believe that there's corruption in one of these areas, you got to at least entertain the idea that there's corruption in all of them. And yeah, it's one of my big concerns is will there be a fair 2022 election in the U.S.? Because it's crucial, right? I mean, you know, the Republican Party in the United States is absolutely at war with its base. The Mitch McConnells and, you know, kind of old school Republican rhinos are absolutely at war with the new generation, the pro-America crowd. That just wants to see America successful. And they talk about it as nationalism, as if nationalism is a bad thing. Nationalism is a terrible thing if you live in Nazi Germany. Nationalism is a terrible thing if you live in communist China. Nationalism, when your nation is based on principles of freedom and expanding freedom around the globe and ensuring democracy and fairness, is a great thing. I mean, we should all support that. So, yeah, it's like Canada pre-Trudeau. I mean, of course you would want nationalism in a pre-Trudeau Canada. I mean, you get a country that's a free nation and supporting freedom. Yeah, we want that. So, you know, this anti-nationalism that they're talking about is really, it's a whole series of fallacies. And they're doing it to try and push this kind of globalist idea. Well, who wins with globalism? Well, communists and, people like the WEF, who are, you know, they claim to be capitalist, but the reality is there's nothing capitalist about it, because capitalism only exists when there's free markets. Well, there's no free markets when, the billionaire companies put their thumbs on the governments and the governments interfere with the free markets. And that's exactly what's happened. So there is no crony capitalism, is not capitalism. That's what the WEF is promoting. And then on the other side, you've got the communist nations like China, who are not at all interested in promoting anything. I mean, yeah, communist China and crony capitalism are two sides of the same coin in my mind. So these elections are critical. And really, if we don't have enough people turn out to overcome some of the fraud and some of the nonsense that's going to occur, if we don't have enough people watching the polling places and actively pursuing and fighting against corruption, it's going to be a scary thing. Because ultimately, you know, I think that we've seen on a global scale, as America's freedoms have diminished, so have the global freedoms. You know, America is absolutely under attack. And, you know, it's one of the reasons, yeah, I've talked to a lot of people and made a lot of wonderful friends from other countries. And they say, well, you know, can you help us? I say, I'd love to, but I'm so busy here that I just can't make any more time. And the problem is that if America falls, there is no shining beacon on the hill. There's no one to look to. We're in serious trouble.
Yes, yes. And I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, the issue at the southern border is in no way acceptable, it should show every college student and every leftist leaning socialist clown in America and Canada that those people who are crossing the Rio Grande with a shopping bag to have a better life with nothing else to their name, that's the American dream. Yeah. And again, recently on this business conference, there's a ton of Latinos there, husband and wife business team, some of them operating $30, $40 million businesses. And that was really represented to me why that demographic is that largest growing Republican base, to the chagrin of the Democrats. But those people aren't interested in socialism. They're not interested in handouts. They're interested in hard work, building something. They're people of faith generally. They're focused on family and these core values that the original American dream is based on. And God bless all those people for attempting it, and shame on those people who think that somehow America is bad. I mean, and clearly there's cracks within the system, and there's things that shouldn't have happened, and the military industrial complex and so forth. But the vision of the founding fathers is, the purest form of freedom and the ability for one to transcend class and whether that's socioeconomic class and do whatever you want, your mind puts you, whatever your mind creates, you can put into action.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at the history of the United States, you know, our founding fathers created something that was brilliant enough that where we made mistakes, we were able to correct them and then lead. I mean, you know, we had slavery, we got rid of it. And then not only did we get rid of it, but we helped abolish apartheid and slavery around the world. We fought all over the world to do that. You know, we had an equal application of laws based on men versus women, sexism. And we got rid of it. And then not only did we get rid of it, we've helped to stand for equality across the world. America is much like any other thing created by man. It has a history of imperfection, but our founding fathers created something so brilliant that we were able to recover from those imperfections and then help the whole world to recover. And it was because we preserved the freedom for people to recognize, hey, we made a mistake, and now we need to fix it. And that is a real threat if you're a globalist or a tyrannical dictator or someone like China. You know, the CCP, You can't have a nation that continues to provide prosperity and success and happiness and people living great lives while your people are tortured and abused so that a few of you at the top can remain elite, which is which is all communism is. You know, communism is the greatest lie ever told. And again, if we look at what the World Economic Forum and the crony capitalists are doing, there's no difference. They just, you know, they dress it up and call it a different name. But when you have globalist people who are trying to preserve power for all future, or you have communists who's trying to preserve the power to the Communist Party for all future, it's still the same. You still have a small group of people that think they're going to control everything, and they can, you know, whatever mechanism they want to do it by, or whatever they want to call it, you know, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's still a duck.
Yeah, agreed. So let's shift gears here. And before we delve into your landmark lawsuit, I feel it's important to cover some highly important newly emerging news, namely the recent activities of the NIH, NIAID, and the National Microbiology Laboratory located here in Winnipeg, Canada, working on yet another round of gain-of-function research, this time on the 1918 influenza virus. What facts do you know about this recent development?
Well, I mean, they published a scientific study, and the scientific study specifically talks about, and I'm looking over at it right now, I mean, it talks about how they reconstituted the 1918 Spanish flu, how they redeveloped it. You know, I mean, this is something that was no longer in circulation. It was gone. They had to recover it from dead people. And then they had to find a way to rebuild it and recreate it. And they're performing this gain of function work on it. I mean, it didn't exist anymore. But, you know, apparently these people felt like, you know, their gain of function work to create SARS-CoV-2 went so well, they might as well do some more. You know, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. We have a global pandemic going on from a disease that was created in a lab that's caused more chaos and upheaval than anything in history, we decide to double down on it. I mean, we know that in Galveston, Texas, and in a few other labs around the country in the U.S., they're doing gain of function on Ebola. What? Wow. That's not dangerous enough as it is. Then you see that they're doing gain of function on the Spanish flu. Really? I mean, do we not learn? It's not that we don't learn. These people feel like they can control it. This was an intended plan. This whole pandemic was a plan. This whole thing was, it's crooked from the get-go. And, you know, why not? These guys just do the same thing again. They keep putting it out there. I mean, if it worked this well, look at the wealth transfer. They said at the WEF conference not that long ago that COVID was the most profitable event in human history. Well, they're right if you're a billionaire, not if you're a small business guy or a normal person. But, you know, for the billionaire crowd that was there, they were right. So
that's a very interesting statement. I mean, clearly that shows just how disconnected they are from the average day global citizen to say that COVID was the most profitable episode in human. That's just madness. You know, that shows where their minds are at. I think it's pertinent to share the following passage from that paper that we're referring to. Which is that the 1918 influenza pandemic was amongst the most severe in history, taking the lives of approximately 50 million people worldwide. A novel prophylactic vaccine are urgently needed to prevent another such pandemic. So, you know, with a statement like that, we have to ask, you know, do these people have no shame? Have they learned nothing from the last 2.5 years of utter and complete mismanagement of our public health agencies? I mean, what kind of moron or psychopath could be possibly oblivious enough to support this research and to make these kind of statements?
Yeah, well, I mean, this goes to one of the issues that we're dealing with in court. You know, are these quote unquote vaccines actually vaccines? And we believe that they've been misbranded. I mean, these are gain of function gene therapies, gene therapies based on gain of function research. These are not vaccines. Vaccines were traditionally dead or attenuated viruses, you know, that were used to build immunity. What we have now is we have things that go in and change your genes or alter your genes or place new genes in there. You know, mRNA through reverse transcription does alter your genes. I mean, that's why it's called gene therapy. And we know this, right? So we know because Moderna in its 2019 SEC filings talked extensively about the fact that one of the great risks for their company was the fact that their work is all based on gene therapy and that mRNA is a gene therapy platform. I mean, they've admitted this. Yeah, the fact checkers like to keep fact checking this, but I challenge them. Go ahead and take a look at them and the Moderna SEC filings or the Pfizer filings. There's been Pfizer filings too. You know, explain to me why the COVID vaccine, when it was given its fake approval in the US, because you know, the vaccine that they approved never was actually created, explain to me why that Pfizer, in its creation, accepted that they were going to be required to do a post-authorization study on gene therapies, shedding and gene therapy drugs. I mean, the study that they were required to do was based on a study designed for shedding and gene therapy drugs. So that indicates that this is a gene therapy and that also that there's a great potential for shedding, with both of which they continue to lie about and deny. You know, so you know, this whole thing is just it's corruption from beginning to end. And you know, we the people either stand and fight or we live with the consequences.
Yes. And the paper's findings foreshadow an even more sinister potential for this research, which is that they seek to further increase the pathogenicity of their gain of function work, as the novel virus that they recreated or created was not sufficiently pathogenic to enact a damage to their host, in this case, I guess, macaques and rhesus monkeys. So they cannot test a prophylactic vaccine because the severe disease combined with a lethal outcome needs to be there for this indication of vaccine efficacy. Are there no laws which prevent such activity? And how can this work pass an ethics board based on what's happened over the last 2.5 years?
Corruption. I don't know how else to answer it.
That's
I'd love to tell you that this is all copacetic, but you know, to my mind, everything about this is corrupt. And you know, I mean, yeah, one of the things that the U.S. has taken to doing is passing laws that are several thousand pages at a time, so that no one can read them. And even if you can read them, good luck, you know, putting it in context. They've done this because they know that if they pass laws that are that big and that complex, they can sneak things in, right? And they've done a lot of this, an awful lot of this. Right now, as an attorney, I think it's safe to say that I could find almost a law that almost everybody on the planet is violating at one point or another almost every single day. I mean, you know, it's just mind-blowing. The amount of law on the books in the United States is so far beyond what anybody can actually comprehend that, you know, I mean, I spend every waking minute studying COVID and COVID law and, you know, the law related to freedom and things like that, and I can't keep up, you know, so I don't know how anybody else could because I challenge anybody to work more hours than I do. You know, it's just no, I don't think that this is in any way, shape, or form ethical. I do think it's corruption at the highest levels. But you know, we've got in the USA, we've got the FDA is bought and owned by pharmaceutical companies, and we've got the courts that keep working to try and ensure that the federal government can't be challenged in any way, shape, or form. And it's really a shady and corrupt system.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. So, can we make the argument then that these snake oil salesmen are working behind the scenes to create the disease and then offer the world their cure?
Well, I don't think there's any argument to be made. I think that's just fact. I mean, you know, listen, we're getting ready. We're working with Dr. Andrew Huff. Yeah, Dr. Andrew Huff worked for EcoHealth Alliance while they created SARS-CoV-2 in the Wuhan lab. We're about to blow all that stuff up, right? I mean, it's huge. We've got firsthand testimony. We've got a witness. We've got everything else. I mean, they created the disease. At the same time they were creating the disease, they were working on vaccines and jabs and things like that to try and deal with the cure. You know, I mean, you don't, anybody that's into biological development knows that you don't create a disease without also working on a cure. I mean, it's insanity. And it's something, Yeah, a lot of people talk about it. Was it a bioweapon? Was it this? Was it that? Well, of course it was a bioweapon in some sense. Was it a bioweapon in the sense that someone was going to launch it out of a missile? Probably not. But did they need to? Well, apparently not.
Yes.
I think one of the problems we have is that when we look at these things and we ask these questions, we look at them in a very traditional fashion. When we say a bioweapon, we think, well, someone's going to drop a bomb and launch some sort of a, big cloud of chemicals that kill everybody. Well, that's not the thing here, right? Nobody wants to get into a kinetic war. China doesn't, the United States, nobody does. If we bullets start flying, nobody wins, including the communists, including the globalists, including anybody, right? So how do you do war in the 21st century? Well, we put out something that disrupts the entirety of society, and I can't prove that it was intentionally leaked, but I am 100% certain this was created in a lab in Wuhan. And I'm equally certain that China's been on record since the 90s talking about their desire to build, biological weapons. And I'm also certain that, China's an avowed enemy of freedom around the world. They've spoken about that endlessly. And I'm equally certain that, the disruption that they've caused globally, economically, and everything else has created a tremendous opportunity for the communists and the dictators of the world to try and fill in power gaps. I mean, look what they've done. So, was this an intentional thing? I guess I'll leave that to the listeners to decide.
Yes. And to conclude this segment, it sounds like you're alluding to the fact that your law firm is looking to demonstrate that the SARS-CoV-2 was in fact created in the Wuhan labs as part of a gain of function project. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, we're gonna, that's coming.
Okay. And have you had a chance to chat with the CCP defector and a guest of this program on several occasions, Dr. Liman Yang?
I have spoken to her. She is a wonderful lady, brilliant scientist, and really, really an interesting person. I think that she's got a lot of courage to have been willing to speak out in the way she has.
Yeah, I think we need to add a brave young woman to the list of her accolades. I mean, certainly,
Yes.
I'd imagine she is on the hit list of the CCP, and she probably has to be very careful of her whereabouts and her surroundings at all times.
Yes. Yeah, I truly feel bad. It's tough to live your life looking over your shoulder, but she's had the courage to do it, and it's a good thing.
Yes,
It's a good thing for
absolutely.
humanity.
Absolutely. So I have a series of names here, Mr. Rents. If you could give me either the first word or phrase that comes to your mind when I mention the following, I'd appreciate that. And
Sure.
we'll start with Dr. Fauci.
Crook. I mean, I don't know what else to genocide, crook, murderer. I mean, those are the words that come to mind. This
Okay.
guy, one of the things that I'll say is that we all need to understand one thing about Fauci. He's not the head of the snake. He's used his power and position to do everything possible to drive this. But make no mistake, Fauci's bought and owned.
Yeah, another
So we,
puppet.
I want him in jail like you can't believe, but I want to get to the people that paid for
Yes, Joe Biden.
him. Demented, diapers, pooped his pants. I mean, you asked for the first words. Those are the things that pop into my mind. Yeah, it's amazing that the first things that I think about when I think about the President of the United States is the fact that the guy crapped his pants at the Vatican. I mean, he's an embarrassment to the country. The guy's always been a crook. I mean, just who's the highest bidder? I'm selling out. As long as the big guy's getting his share, as per the Hunter Biden emails. But I think that the problem is right now is that you got a guy who's only mentally maybe a third there, and he's not in any way, shape, or form behind what's going on. I mean, he's happy to sell out and to let people who are giving him his cut do what they got to do. But it's the people pulling his strings right now that I think are a little bit scarier.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's, you can, and in a way, it's, as much as he's not a nice guy and never has been, this is ultimately elder abuse. I mean, here's a demented old guy who's reading off a teleprompter. He probably doesn't even know it. At the end of the day, he doesn't even know what's going on.
Yeah, he would be just as happy to sit in the corner and sniff young girls' hair as he would be to be president of the United States. And if you told him while he was sitting in the corner sniffing kids' hair that he was the president, he'd be happy.
He'd be shocked. Am I the president? Wow, that's great. Donald Trump.
A patriot. Patriot, but misguided on this, you know, on this issue. Unfortunately, you know, the Donald has been and is one of the, you know, a necessary thing in the United States. We need to have someone who's going to put America first. The one issue he's failed on is COVID. He's failed immensely and mind-blowingly. And I really pray that he wakes up to this. You know, I don't know at this point, I don't know whether it's that he's surrounded by crooks. I mean, certainly there's a lot of them in there, or if he's got some sort of a strategy on this or what. But I know that every day that goes by, you know, there's millions more people at risk of dying from these jabs and from future jabs and everything else. The swamp is getting more entrenched. And, you know, I understand that he can only fight so many fights at once. But this is a battle for the future of humanity. You know, I mean, I this is part of the CCP, part of the swamp, part of the election fraud, part of everything. This is a core part of all of that. And, you know, I'm just praying that he speaks out soon.
Yeah, very good. Justin Trudeau.
Joke. Absolute joke. I mean, this guy is an absolute clown. I'm trying not to swear. So there's a couple guys in this world that really bother me. So I'm going to share my toxic masculinity here for a minute. I'm okay with the fact that I'm a man. I'm not going to apologize for the fact that I'm a man. And I just don't care for little weenie wusses. And, you know, Trudeau reminds me of Harari in the sense that I think he should have got beat up more in the playground. No one beat him up on the playground enough. That's the only explanation I can come up with for this. Now, when I was growing up, I was always the biggest kid on the playground. And, you know, interestingly enough, I never beat up anybody ever unless they were beating someone else up. But I always stood up for other people. And if someone else was getting beat up, I'd stand up for him. This guy, I don't, it's like, he needed beat up on the playground. Yeah, he was one of those. He's just a little weeny, smarmy wuss, and you know, he just doesn't sit well with me. He's not someone to me. There's nothing better than sitting around. You give me a few friends, a few beers, and a campfire, and I'm a happy man. That's all I need. I'm real simple. This guy, I mean, he'd be whining about smoke at the campfire. I don't know if I can drink this beer. It's not I only like, you know, high-end wine, which I like high-end wine too, but you know, really? You know, so I just, there's nothing about this guy that is manly or relatable or traditional or anything. He's just a little smarmy wuss that needs smacked.
Yeah, I think the beat down, whether if it didn't occur on the playground, certainly needs to happen now.
I'm not in the shape I was as a young man, but I spent a lot of years in martial arts and boxing. I'd be happy to put the gloves on with them.
Well, they're interesting enough. A friend of mine knows a senator here in Canada, and early on in Trudeau's prime ministership, there was a charity boxing event. And we're desperately trying to get another one of those up and running. So if we're able to, we'll give you a call. Maybe we'll get you in the ring for a round with them.
Hey, you know, as long as I don't have to be jabbed to do it.
Yeah, there you go. Dr. Janet Woodcock.
Just liar. I think my first reaction on a lot of the doctors. Is going to be, you know, just essentially just dishonest. I mean, listen, I am by no means a scientist. Okay. Yeah. Like I said, I did my master's work in health sciences, and you can see behind me there's a bunch of those books there. I've read them all. And I actually learned a few things. And I spend a lot of time reading these studies and this, that, and other. If I, as a lawyer and a non-scientist, can look at this stuff and see what's going on, you're going to tell me that these guys who claim to be the smartest guys in the room or gals are not able to do the same thing? I mean, really? So I think when you talk about Birx, you talk about Fauci, you talk about a lot of the guys at the AMA or these other organizations, and what I've found is when I've traced the money, I see how much money pharma's given to all of them and how they, so the reaction you're going to get on most doctors from me is dishonest. There's a few who are doing everything they can, and I those guys are heroes. But on that side, you're going to say, on the other side, but it's just sad and dishonest. I mean, Mengele.
Yeah, exactly. Klaus Schwab.
Well, I accidentally, Clay Clark asked me this on an interview the other day, and I said, well, he reminds me of a penis. I know that's not what you're looking for, but I think it's very fitting. The guy is really just an evil monster. It's like it's hard for me to fathom that this guy's even human. The stuff he's promoting, when you look at Harari, you look at the people he's surrounding himself with, and you look at the things that he's promoting, the eugenics and all these sorts of things. This guy is, I mean, he's just bad. I mean, just plain bad. So yeah, but he's also brilliant. He's also brilliant. I will say that a lot of these guys are brilliant. Klaus Schwab has been able to manipulate his way into a position where he's got all these global leaders listening to his nonsense. Hitler was brilliant. He was the most evil genius in history, probably. But if you're going to argue Hitler's flaws, one of them is not stupidity. The guy was able to convince an entire nation that slaughtering millions of people for no reason was a good idea. How do you do that? That, I mean, that's evil. It's evil on every level, yet he was able to do that. And I think, I can't compare Schwab to Hitler quite yet. I think he's got goals of being there. He hasn't gotten that far. But I mean, if you listen to Harari, who's frequently lamenting the fact that Hitler and Stalin didn't have the technology we have today, there's clips of that. And these are the people that Schwab surrounds himself with. So I think that there's something really wrong with you if you would be anywhere near someone like that, let alone do what he's doing.
Agreed. Who's Tedros Adhanom?
Just a crook. He's just another crook. He's Fauci on the World Health in the world of the World Health Organization. Bought and owned. I think he's mid management, just like Fauci is. His job is to execute the plan, to be the whipping post to an extent. He's the guy who's going to get thrown under the bus if and when the truth comes out properly. Fauci and Tedros, I think, are both in part there where to they'll be the fall guys if the rich people at top, if the leaders who are behind this have to make them such, because I mean, ultimately you're not going to see the guys at the top want to take the fall, so they'll throw whoever they got under the bus. And they position these nobodies, these mid-level bureaucrats who are average at best, like Fauci, like Tedros, to be in positions of great power and authority, or at least appearing to be in great positions of power and authority. And so I think the other word that would come to mind is fall guy.
And then what about Bill Gates?
Eugenicist monster. And the guy is just sick. He's got issues. I mean, if you listen to his interviews, if you look at what he's doing, he gets billions of dollars and then he acts like he's giving it away. He didn't give anything away. He just put in a tax shelter. I mean, that's what these billionaires do. You get enough money, you put it into what you call a philanthropy, but you actually control it, and it's nothing more than a tax shelter. I mean, we all heard Warren Buffett and his thing, I pay less taxes than my secretary. Well, meanwhile you're promoting, tax increases on everybody else. So, I don't know. To me, Gates has some serious mental issues. I can't. I mean, anybody who's out there promoting eugenics, the vaccine experimentation that he's paid for around the world, and that's something that a lot of people aren't aware of. I mean, he's created experimental vaccines and pushed them around the world, and the absolute carnage it's caused is mind-blowing. I mean, very few people recognize that, but he's back there pulling the strings on a lot of this.
Senator Ron Johnson.
Ron Johnson is as much a hero as any politician you can find. I mean, this guy has put his butt on the line to fight some serious bad guys. And there are probably just a handful of American federal elected officials that I actually like. I do mean a small handful. He's one of them. Every time that I've asked, and I can speak personally on this, Ron Johnson stood behind the DoD whistleblowers when we brought that. When I've called Ron and said, "Hey, Senator, we've got this information," he always makes sure that we can verify it and triple check it, and he's very careful about that, which he has to be. But after it's verified, after we've triple checked, he has stood behind anything. It didn't matter how scary or hard it is. When everybody else is turning political tail and running, that guy has stood. And I think that's a testament to his character, the fact that he's doing that. And he's really impressed me.
Excellent. Dr. Reiner Fulmisch.
Good guy. Good guy. I like Reiner. Reiner and I met pretty early on in this fight, and I've been honored to call him a friend and a compatriot on this whole thing. We've walked a little bit different paths. I mean, he's fighting his fight, I'm fighting mine, but we're both fighting the same fight, right? And I value that. I value that there's other people. I mean, when I started, like I said, I'm a nobody. I'm a little nobody from a little place, and I've developed a platform at this point. But Reiner was a is an experienced attorney with a lot of background and a lot of good things he's done. And so he fought it from the best perspective he had and the best way that he could, and I've done the same. And I've been honored to know him and to fight alongside him.
Very good. Dr. Peter McCullough.
Another hero. Peter is taking a lot of risk. Yeah, Peter suffers from one issue. And that's the same issue that a lot of other guys, these guys run into, and it's that they're such good scientists that it's a scientist's job to analyze and then to analyze again. And until you've got something to back up and the evidence and the science to back it up, these scientists are very, very hesitant to draw conclusions, which is good. That's what you want from a good scientist. And Peter is, without a doubt, one of the most brilliant scientists I've ever ran across. As an attorney, I would love it if he'd just come out and say these things are poison, don't do it. But he's got to have study after study, and I can appreciate and respect that because that is what it takes to be a top scientist.
Dr. Pierre Corey.
Another brilliant guy. I believe, and I don't think I'm giving away any secrets, but I believe Pierre and Peter and a lot of these guys were historically Democrats. And unfortunately, this issue has been painted as a partisan issue. And if you're on the same side that I am, a lot of these people, they try and paint them as conservative or Republican. And I think it's a real testament when you talk about Pierre and Peter and some of these other guys, the fact that, I mean, in political circles, in social circles, they're going to get, you know, ostracized and picked on because, you know, oh, you are you this now? Are you that now? No, what they are is they're scientists, they're doctors, they're people who are standing for life. And I think that that's really admirable because when you're willing to take personal shots to stand for a cause, that's a great thing.
Yes. And finally, Dr. Paul Merrick.
Same thing. Another brilliant guy, another guy who's fighting this. You know, we've got these guys who have taken so many personal shots, you know, and I don't get into one thing you'll never hear me do is I don't get into, you know, this scientist is mad at that scientist because this scientist said that and that scientist said this. I don't care about the nuance of the scientific debate. It doesn't matter to me. All of these guys, and not that any of those guys in particular are fighting, but all of these guys are brilliant scientists. And sometimes they have different thoughts, different views, different perspectives. And, you know, them and other scientists that I work with sometimes will have different thoughts, different views, different perspectives. Ultimately, my goal is to move the ball down the field, towards freedom, towards truth, towards all these things. And the healthy scientific debate, whether it's on our side or against the other side, is a good thing. I'm happy with it. So, you know, all of these guys, they've got a little bit different takes on different things. You know, Corey's treatment protocols were a little different than McCullough's, and but I just think it's amazing that these guys are all working together to move this ball down the field. And that's what we have to do because ultimately the key here is not to decide who's right in terms of the science. It's to ensure that we can all, you know, be fighting and be part of this.
Yes. So moving on to the lawsuit here now. You filed a lawsuit July 19th, 2021, on behalf of America's frontline doctors and a series of other plaintiffs in the District Court for Northern Alabama. Let's examine the most important and salient facts regarding this case, and then we'll get into the legal arguments that support this action. So perhaps we begin with the facts here. You've divided your lawsuit into a series of subsections. And I think the most important one is the unlawful vaccine emergency youth authorization. You know, give us the high level facts there. Why is this important, and why should people know about this?
Well, so we've got a number of cases, and they're in different stages. I've got one case that's really important that we're getting ready, and I think we're going to be appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court. We've got the case that you're talking about with the vaccines, and that's going to be appealed also. And we have others, but they're all in various stages of appeal and process. One of the things that I think is critical, and some of the details of those cases are really in the weeds, to be honest. But I think one of the most important and foundational aspects of all of these cases comes down to this, and I really want to stress this for the listeners. There are very clear violations of the law occurring. Okay, the approval of these vaccines, the continued authorization of these vaccines, all these different things, these are very, very clear issues. Okay, and the issues we run into in court are not a question of whether, you know, USC 360 triple B dash 3 has been violated. It has. There's no question. The issue is the court won't look at it. And the reason they won't look at it is they will say that these laws are administrative in nature and you don't have standing as a citizen to sue over it. Or there's sovereign immunity and you can't sue over it. Or there's this and you can't sue over it. Or there's that. And so the courts are really creating a lot of doctrine right now that prevents citizens from actually challenging the federal government. And that is the single greatest threat to our democracy and to our republic that I could list. If the courts do not allow for citizens to challenge their government, what is their role? I mean, are they just there to you know, for me to chase an ambulance and, you know, once you've gotten a car wreck, sue the guy that hit you? The courts were ultimately a mechanism for dispute resolution. And if the people can't be heard, if the courts refuse to hear the people, where does that leave us? And so I think that when we talk about a lot of these causes of action, they all have a very good chance, but they all have to get over that hurdle. And that is the hurdle that we are facing universally. That is actually what that case that I'm looking at bringing to the Supreme Court comes down to. Ultimately, can we bring these cases? And there's a number of different cases that'll have to be brought to get this corrected. And there's no promise on these because the courts have been very reticent about allowing us to go after the government. But the thing that we have to ask the courts are, if we're not allowed to go after the government, what role do you have? Are you actually a co-equal branch of the government? And the U.S., the federal government is created of three equal branches, the legislative, the judicial, and the executive. All three are equal. The role of the judicial is to interpret the law. But if the citizens can't ask the courts to interpret the law as against the government, what is the point of having the law? What is the point of having a court? What is the point of any of this? Just call it a dictatorship. If the government gets to make the law and then tell you what it means, and you as a citizen can't even challenge it, and you've got to ask the government to challenge itself, well, that's never going to happen. It's ridiculous. So, ultimately, that is the single biggest issue we're facing, and that is the question we're going to be asking the courts, and we are asking the courts. And unfortunately, it's the reason that so many of these other questions are not being answered. You know, people point all the time. I get an email. If I get one email a day, I get 1,000 from people saying, hey, I just saw this law and the federal government's breaking it. Yes, you're right. Well, what are you going to do about it? Well, everything I can. And we are. But unfortunately, we had gotten to a situation where our courts wouldn't take steps and wouldn't take action. So I think it will become critical over the coming months, I would say, to see what happens with this. Because if the Supreme Court is unwilling to hear that question, and unwilling to do something with it, we really have essentially invalidated our judicial branch and are left with no real alternative for the people to be heard when there are issues. I mean, we saw a bunch of this when it came to the election questions. Now, we can debate over whether those are well-brought cases or not, but the courts didn't want to hear the facts. They didn't want to hear the case. Okay. Well, now we've got the same thing happening with COVID. If the most important and monumental questions of our time are things that the courts are unwilling to hear or answer, what should we do? What are the people left with? And that's a scary thing because it's not good for the country. It's not good for people if the courts are refusing to do their job.
Interesting. I know you have to go, Mr. Rentz. Let's look to continue this as a part two and delve into some more of these details. I've enjoyed our conversation tremendously today. We've covered some great points. You enjoy the rest of your day, and let's look to reconnect here in the near future.
That would be great, Michael. I enjoyed the interview, and thank you so much. And God bless the people of Canada and anybody else that's listening to this. We all got to stand together.
Absolutely. God bless, sir, and all the best. We'll chat soon.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.